in. I don't even know how to open a terminal.
I was really hesitant when we set up Discord.
Tell me about sex and chism.
The GDPR stuff can be the bane of my existence sometimes.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Socktails. So for this particular episode, our guest is Chris Humphreys. He works as an adversarial engineer at Cyber One Security based over in the US. So a nice little change from some of our UK guests that we've had. And effectively works as a pen tester, fairly new into the role. We talk a little bit about his history, how he got into the role, some of the training, but also some of the work that he does coming up for Black Hat US in his role as trainer, and how he's kind of working as part of his role within the company and what they do as part of the Black Hat. Really interesting to have a chat with Chris. Before we go on to the interview, I just wanted to say a couple of things in the fact that we've updated our Socktails website. So if you've not gone and had a look at that, socktails.co.uk, we've updated that. Looks a little bit more professional and fancy, which is great. But also, if you're enjoying the podcast, which I hope you are, and you'd like to be able to support us in this, we are completely independent, self-funded. We do have a Buy Me a Coffee page, buymeacoffee.com/Socktails. We're also looking at the possibility of getting some sponsors involved, either for the website or some of the episodes themselves. So if you have any interest in that, please do get in touch. So with that housekeeping out of the way, let's move on to the interview. Here's Chris Humphreys. Okay, so now we go on to our interview guest, and for this particular episode, we've got Chris Humphreys, who works for Cyber One Security, based over in the US, and you'll be able to tell that by his accent when he starts talking in a moment, but also has one of the best job titles, I think, which is Adversarial Engineer, so we'll ask him a little bit about that. But not only the work he's done with Cyber One Security, but also has worked and helped as a trainer for some of the Black Hat conferences as well. So Chris, welcome to Socktails.
It's good to be here. It's weird for me to hear an American accent because I'm just surrounded with it. Do I just sound like I should have like a rifle? Hey, y'all.
Well, exactly. I mean, there are some American stereotypes that we should probably avoid as part of this.
Oh, okay.
I mean, pick up what you like, right? So hot dogs, baseball, anything.
None of those things. But I like hot dogs. I didn't get to be a chunker by eating broccoli all day.
Who doesn't like hot dogs? Right. It's the one thing. Last time I was in the US, went to a baseball game, sat there with a hot dog. I mean, it's fantastic, right? Anyway, look, we should probably start talking about some security stuff, right? So welcome along to Socktails. It's been a while to get you on board. I know we've kind of chatted backwards and forwards a little bit, and really interesting as well is the fact that the second episode that I brought out was around the online gaming with IKEA, and we actually kind of met on the game, didn't we? Kind of chatting on the Discord forum. So we've kind of gone a little bit full circle with one of my previous episodes. But can you kind of give us a little bit of kind of intro to yourself, bit of background, and then we can carry on chatting some shit.
Sure thing. So for about 20 years, I was a software developer, a sysadmin, and a DBA. Eventually getting to lead and senior roles in those. And then one day, my ADHD took over and I saw this YouTube video by a guy named IPSEC, IPPSEC. And he does videos where he breaks down hack the box machines, so CTF machines. And I was like, that's pretty cool. I used to want to be a hacker as a teen. That's why I got into computing. And then I quote unquote sold out and started building and supporting business applications and databases. But yeah, anyway, I was watching that, got obsessed. I just started copying him and then eventually got that OSCP cert. And luckily I got a job within 2 months of getting that thing. And it's at my current employer where I've been since 2020, which was a great time to do anything, but I got the OSCP and got hired as a pen tester in spite of it all. Adversarial engineer is a really cool title. It's just pen tester.
Oh, don't play it down, Chris. It's a great title.
I engineer all the adversary stuff.
All of it. All of the stuff. I know this is an audio podcast, but we're obviously on camera. I can see the OCP certificate framed in the background, together with a nice little smiley face on a whiteboard, which is
everything. It's for myself.
IT, really.
Both of those are for myself. Like, I keep that up there more as a reminder, because for me, I was like, there is no way I'm going to be able to get this, because I went from zero, like literally nothing. I'm
to
just
try
like,
harder, right?
Yeah. Oh God, I hate that. Yeah. I had to internalize it. Like, hey, buddy, you can do it. Stick with it. You got it. That was what try harder was for me. But overall, I enjoyed it. But yeah, when I see that, I'm like, hey, man, you like worked really hard and you got it and you earned it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, well done. I don't have one. It's a very difficult qualification to.
Nobody told me how hard it was. I just had a mentor guy that was a pen tester, and I was doing the Hack the Box and the Vulnhub stuff. And he's like, you know, if you want to get a job as a pen tester, you need to get this OSCP cert. I'm like, oh, all right, cool. What do I got to do? And he's like, you got to Hack the Box easy and medium boxes within 4 hours. I'm like, well, it's taking me like 4 days right now, but I'll get there. But eventually I got there and I'm like, all right, let's do it. But no one, like, I had like no real concept of like the landscape. I just knew that's what I needed to do. And all sights were on it. So it's like freedom.
Straight into it. So not really a security background before you went straight into the CERN and straight
not
into
per
the pen
se.
Testing.
Like, I would say I've done a lot, like I've done a lot of sysadmin stuff, and a lot of that has also been like setting up Elk, like putting all the logs together in a sim to try to have some alerting and some optics on what's going on with, like, I was in charge of all of AWS for $100 million platform. And so there's a lot of stuff. And so a lot of those have parallels, but like, I also wasn't sitting in a NOC and getting alerts. And I mean, I was getting alerts. They just weren't coming out of a sim or an EDR or whatever the software is, you know?
So do you think there must be some transferable skills there from what you're doing from, you know, the kind of the AppSec side, database side, for when you're doing some of the pen testing, to have an understanding of how those apps work?
Oh yeah.
To look at it from the shall I use the phrase red teaming? We'll do it from that kind of red teaming pen testing style angle, yeah?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's probably one of the strongest assets I had trying to come into this field. It's pretty hard to break in. I know I got lucky and like I leveraged everything I could, but knowing how like sysadmins work, not just what they do, but sort of their mindsets of like shared local admin passwords. I did it. You know, I'm sure a lot of admins out there, it's like, raise your hand. There'd be 100 people raising their hand. Mm-hmm. And then also building all these web applications and infrastructure. So I know all the stacks pretty much. But I was just going to say, I'm like a graybeard. I don't really know I'm not hip to like, I had to catch up to like all these React and like JSON JavaScript frameworks. Like, I'm still, like I said, a graybeard, where I'm like, JavaScript's not even a real language, you know, but.
We might have upset a few people there.
I'm the one they're getting the last laugh, right? Like, PHP and JavaScript are first class citizens in this world, despite everything.
Indeed. So how do you, from a pen testing perspective, you know, we've mentioned that a couple of times on the podcast with some previous guests as well. What's your kind of approach to that? Do you have a kind of set scope? Do you have a kind of environment that you deal with, set number of tools, or a lot of it, do you have, kind of think on your feet, a bit more ad hoc, or kind of a mix of both? How do you look at kind of approaching an engagement?
I suppose a mix of both. So where I work, unlike a lot of pen test shops, is that we pretty much have every scope. So like, I could be on an internal network and external 1 week, and then a web app the next week, and, you know, a social the next. And while there are sort of tooling that everybody else uses, it's still left to us to be creative and like approach it however we want, until there's a problem, you know. But generally, like, we all work good together. Like, we still use the same, like, even if you're a junior or a senior, like, you're still going to be approaching the problem of a pen test the same way, which I think was surprising for me to learn as a junior. Because the only real difference, I think, between junior pen testers and seniors are just, one, the experience. So your intuition is trained. But also, another big one, which is what I'm working on or have worked on, is prioritizing or getting your speed faster and not wasting as much time. Because for pen testers, our greatest enemy is actually time. Mm-hmm. So we have to kill something, but we only have a week or three, you know, and we still have to write the report, which is actually the deliverable. That's what they're paying for.
I was going to say, you've only got a limited time, so you'll probably have a limited scope of assets. How do you get frustrated when you're kind of doing some of the pre-work for this and your customer will turn around and go, oh, you can't touch that, it's out of scope? Or is that more a case of going, okay, they've got a clear business justification for that, whether they have or they haven't, is a different question.
No, I think I would answer the question. I think I would answer it just from a different perspective, because I think as part of this shift from being this pure engineer role of sysadmin and developer to pen testing, which is more of like an auditor and because I'm a contractor, so I help companies. So for me, the value added and the draw is that I'm a specialized skill set that they're hiring, and my job is to help them. But yeah, it is frustrating where I have gotten scopes and then they remove, you know, all the domain controllers out of the scope. And I'm like, all right. You know, it's your test. Like, yeah. You know, we can only test what's in scope, so we can't really tell them, right?
But is there an element there from a consultancy perspective to turn around and say, well, actually, you need things like this to be in,
yeah,
to be in scope?
We could strongly suggest it, but it's really their, you know, at the end of the day, they know their environment better than we do, even though we know DAs are at these IPs and you just removed all of them. Or, you know, so, but yeah, that's, but overall, it's not too bad. There's usually it's the same process. I think, a lot of people have a lot of bad things to say about the OSCP. I'm going back to that, to my current job of actually doing it, is that my biggest challenge with the OSCP exam was keeping a cool head under extreme pressure, even if it was mostly self-imposed. But so generally on the job, I keep a cool head. So unless there's something terrible, you know, that I'm like, why did you do that? You just wasted all this time that I did for you, you know, but you just let it pass. Like, I have to maintain objectivity. So keeping a cool head is critical. Yeah. I think
that, you know, one of the things about the ICP as well, you've got like a 48 hour exam.
Yeah. Something, 20, is it? But it's, 24 hours. Yeah. And then 20, it's at least when practical. I took it.
Yeah, it's practical, right? So it's not just, because when I took my CEH, and there were a lot of comments about the value of the CEH, it was, which I've covered on a previous podcast, but it was a tick box exercise. It was a multiple guess of, oh, what's this Nmap switch? It's like, all I've proved is that I've remembered of something I've read in a textbook.
Right.
So, but with those kind of practical exams, I think they're a lot more valuable, right? You're giving you a lot more hands-on experience even before you get into a job role.
Yeah, I would say so, because even now those skills are transferable. Like, sure, you're never going to be on the job for 24 hours to try to hack X amount of machines. But I think the process that you learn there of properly enumerating, keeping good notes, keeping a cool head, especially on the exam, taking breaks to just maintain that mental clarity and objectivity. Probably one of the biggest values for me. But Yeah, the machines themselves, especially the OPSEC ones in the exam in the lab, it's almost like they put like bumper rails on to guide you the right way. So if you're enumerating properly, you'll be like, yeah, that's not a place. That's not a place. That's not a place. So it must be here.
Yeah.
But
with the, with the pen testing role, how much do you work with customers from their SOC and their detections team to kind of see what you're doing? Any kind of feedback? Are their alerts correct? Are they logging correct? Are they picking things up?
I would say it really depends on the customer and what they want. So, the terms are confusing. So like red team can be a category, but it can also be a specific role. So like pen testing is on the red side of things, so the attacker side, but red team is testing the blue team, being sneaky, you know, being covert. But the advantage of pen testing is that you don't have to be sneaky. You don't have to be covert. It's like, dude, I got 2 weeks, like whitelist me. Like I'm trying to get the greatest risk, you know, report for you. But yeah, when we run across SOCs, like we want to hear it because we also want to put good things in. Like we're not just about delivering bad news. Like, so a lot of these pen test reports go to the board of whatever company or directly to a C-level, especially for the executive summary. So we try to put, hey, here's the things that you guys are totally nailing it on. And we love to see it because it doesn't happen too often. Like there have been times where we've gotten DA, we've gotten shared admin. We're just like going around the network. No one knows. I'm just like, oh my God, you guys are a very large company and no one knows.
So what are some things that people are doing right? What are some of those things that you kind of pick up and go, actually, I'm really impressed with this?
Generally, whenever there's optics and alerts to things we are doing that are obviously bad. So like a lot of the tooling we use is not customized, right? We're just pen testing. So we're using Responder and CrackMap Exec and like, you know, we're using like known, you know, just built-in baked payloads for everything. And if they don't work, then we get an alert and we're like, good job, you know. But I would say just the lack of optics and the lack of even knowing what's going on, like the big stuff, like why is, you know, John querying the domain controller for everybody in the company repeatedly? Why is he dumping the NTDS and the SAMS databases everywhere? He shouldn't be doing that. He works, you know, he's a contractor. But companies that get that right there's not a lot of them, at least that we hear of.
Okay.
So if you stand out.
I was going to say, things like that are, you know, that's where some of the user behavior analytics come in. Mm-hmm. What is, John doesn't normally query the DC, so not in this way. So it's one thing, I guess, seeing the alert. It's another, I guess, for the SOC teams or the responders to have the context around what they're seeing in that particular regard, and kind of pick that up. I was going to kind of flip it on the head, but it's probably the same kind of answer. But what are people doing wrong? What are the things where you really, oh. I mean, we'll get onto the full SOC site towards the end.
But no. This is good because it's like I said, it's something I've been working on, trying to move more towards how seniors operate is, especially for internals. For me, they're the most fun because you feel like a voyeur on a company network and then you just get to break stuff with the get out of jail free card. But the things that they do wrong. That was the question, right? I'm sorry, I just went scatterbrained in my own thoughts.
Yeah.
I would say whenever I go for quick wins, so when I'm on an internal network, one of the first things I look for is like open network shares, so SMB and, you know, FTP, NFS. Having just documents open to anyone, like found creds in those or get on a machine, probably... shared admin passwords is a pretty big one. Those don't always get caught. I don't know why. I think people look at AD, but just logging into a normal machine, Password spraying, that should be setting off alarms all over the place.
But
a lot of companies had no idea that we've tried to spray like these passwords and creds.
So, and they were, you know, some of that, some of that sounds like,
and the pass, I'm sorry to interrupt you, just the memes of like bad passwords are, it's not a meme, like the year, the company name, you know, what a, it's the same pattern, they exist. And I don't know, get off on a tangent, but also at the same time, I also hate the term with CTF boxes about it's CTF, like it's too CTF-y, like not real world. Because I've seen so many like CTF things and real machines on real pen tests that like, I don't even take it seriously anymore. And it's like, okay, admin, default setup scripts, like, you know, just really, you know?
I was going to say that's it comes down to bad security practice, right? Some of the bad fundamentals, admin for security accounts, as you say, company name and the summer 23 exclamation mark or whatever, and then they get told to change their password in August, and it's autumn 23 or fall 23 for you guys over the other side of the pond. So there's and it's interesting what you were saying there about the CTF, because there's a lot of times when, you know, we're kind of running those CTFs, and a lot of it is theoretical. It's okay, we want to gamify something for an hour or 2 hours or whatever. So you learn stuff, but you have a little bit of fun. But to then actually hear that in the real world, you're still seeing some of those same things that happen, make you kind of go, okay,
maybe on a web server, there's like a zip file of like all the code, open Git, like there's a Git repo from the web, like stuff like this you would only see on CTFs, I thought, but.
And there is in real world. Password.doc.
Yeah. Not, we haven't got one of those, but we have gotten documents that have had passwords in it before. But that's what you look for. I'm like, ooh, open SMB shares. Is there anything here? And the bigger companies, they either have it all together, or they're just a complete mess through like mergers and acquisitions and leftover contractors. And so it's like, look for Blue Keep, like look for Eternal Blue. Like, can we just get an easy win? Like, why waste time scanning 100,000 IPs? Like, let's just look for those ports.
How much do you do from an open source intelligence gathering perspective ahead of a customer engagement?
It depends. Since we're not, you know, full red team, we are on the clock. But sometimes companies will be like, all right, tell me what you could find. And then we're like, hey, here's everything we have of note. Are these the right IPs? Here's all your employees. Here's your, you know, email pattern, you know, stuff like that. But from an OSN perspective, we usually don't hit it that hard unless we're doing for social engagements, phishing. Okay. Not a big fan of phishing, but I get that a lot of people are, because it just seems like a pointless exercise almost, because someone always clicks a fish and like, I don't know.
So this is something else that we've touched on a previous podcast with Richard DeVere, but you're exactly right. There's so many times from a phishing perspective when they're going to click the link. Somebody's going to click that. Why are we chastising John in accounts or Sheila in HR because they've clicked on a link. I'm not going to go into too much detail. We've had a whole podcast on that, but
I'm definitely a fan of that. It should be if they're set up properly, they should have a culture of protecting their assets proactively. Mm-hmm. So if they know that phishing exists, then maybe protect against worst case, you know. Can you detect it? Can you knock the machine offline? Like, what can you do? Because, like you said, it's like Sheila in HR or whatever. She's coming against people that are specifically trained to send her this email and make her click on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like it's an unfair advantage.
You know, something we see, we have a WhatsApp group here for the SEs, for the company that I work for, and there are 80... 90, 100 SEs in this WhatsApp group. We get one phishing email come through. You bet your life it's on that WhatsApp group. someone takes a screenshot and goes, do not click this. I've clicked this. It's a phishing test. Do not click this. I was like, okay. I mean, I guess part of that's doing its job. Anyway,
that's still better than forwarding it around to the whole company. Hey, is this a phishing?
Hey, we had, there was a company that I was dealing with. I can't remember who it was now, but they had a picture of a fish in their Outlook client. And that was their report button, right? Which is great. But their internal slogan was, if in doubt, click the trout.
Oh, nice.
And I remember that because it's great. If anybody listening remembers who that company is, please do let me know, because I'd love to give a shout out to them, because I thought it was a great strapline, a great tagline for that. Can I go back to some of the tools and maybe some of the pen testing you do? We see a lot with people using Kali, Caldera, Havoc, Brute Retail, those kind of tools from a C2 perspective and an adversarial engineer perspective. I'll get that phrase in again. Do you use any of those kind of tools? Is it some custom things in there? How much do you kind of, I guess the question is, how much do you utilize some of those tools that are out there for the industry to be able to do some of that, that kind of pen testing?
I would say pretty well. But for our internal pen testing and external too, we don't really use C2s that much. We use almost like an assumed breach model, where we get an implant shipped that they just plug into some internal network wherever they want to put it. We request that it's on the same network as employees, but we don't always get there. But not everybody has good network segmentation anyway, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, we use a, I mean, we're still free to, so where I work, we're free to use our own tooling. We don't have to follow like a standard run book of here's how you pen test ABC. So like some people use, you know, Ubuntu, some people, like one person's using stuff out of Docker containers. But a lot of the standard tooling I think we use, like I have a Kali instance, but I mean, like it's just a Linux instance to me. we all generally use the same tools. So like scan for ports, you know, when we're on specific things, like we still have Burp Pro for web, and like for internals, like we still have all the same stuff, depending on how big it is, like MassScan and Responder, Crack Macrozec, like pretty much anything with MPacket, Bloodhound, you know, LDAP, the LDAP domain search, whatever the dump one is, I'm spacing on it now, but to do a dump of AD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard a lot of very positive things for things like Bloodhound, from an AD reconnaissance, perspective. And, again, you know, maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, but your Active Directory and your accounts are going to be the crown jewels, right? They're going to be the way in. As you say, contractors that have left the business, your accounts are still active, service accounts that have got the wrong permissions, people that have got domain admin access on their local machines without the ability to do that privilege escalation, you're going to be stumped, right? I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you have ways around it.
Well, in a perfect world, for us, at least for the dopamine release, is as soon as we get on a network, like I like to run Responder with WPAD proxying enabled to try to, if I'm on the same network as users, to try to get those credentials. Because it's like for people that don't know, it's like a built-in feature of Windows to have that proxy. So Windows will search for it, be like, hey, is there a proxy? And be like, Responder will be like, yeah, there's totally a proxy. Come through here. And so users end up giving their credentials without knowing it. And then we'll, you know, try to go from there. Then we have at least a username and a password. We have a giant hashcat, giant password cracking machine. So we just feed that into it. That machine's very sophisticated, mainly from all the crack jobs, you know, so it feeds the beast even more. So it gets faster and faster.
Okay. So you've not taken up the entire stock of GPUs to stick into your crack machine.
No, I think we're going to be rebuilding it. I, I mean, I think it's like a $60,000 machine, something like that. Like, it's ridiculous, but like,
so you don't use the rocky.txt just to fling it through.
No, that, I mean,
more sophisticated not, than that.
Yeah, a bit more. I mean, it's not really my domain. There's somebody else that does the Hashcat, and they just told me what to do to run these jobs. But yeah, I guess it feeds. It has its own like permutations of rules and how to create these unique passwords from data sets mm-hmm. from other crack jobs. So it becomes easier to crack passwords that are like made by humans, you know, like cinnamon with a capital C, 1, 2, 3, 4 exclamation point.
Mm-hmm.
That should fulfill any password requirement.
Yeah.
But it is ridiculously easy to crack.
Yeah.
It's such a common pattern. But yeah, I would say once we get some creds or we find something on a share that allow us to just dig deeper, that's ideal. Doesn't always happen, but that's what we hope for.
Do you ever find yourself in a situation where you're, I mean, you mentioned kind of the voyeurism, I can't even say it properly now, where you've kind of connected into an OpenVNC connection or something. And you're literally sitting there watching somebody work, do their thing. Have you ever kind of been in that kind of
I haven't, kind of situation? But I have had coworkers that have, and they've taken like screenshots of the people while they're doing it to prove that they had their machine. I'm like, oh, all right. No. That's a great story, but I could never see myself doing that.
So almost kind of like an impersonation thing, you know, some of the things that we see from a ransomware group's activity is like during a breach, the company will have a communication channel like Slack or something,
mm-hmm.
and then the ransomware team will jump on to that Slack channel with credentials of a different member of staff and just mock them. Again, have you kind of been in a position where you've got some credentials, you've mm-hmm. jumped onto their Slack or their Teams channel or
no.
Or something along those lines.
Is that
where that line kind of crosses?
Yeah, because we have to stick within like a strict scope. So it's like when we're on an internal, either it'll be wide open or it'll be mm-hmm. like a set network or a set list of CIDRs and IPs that we're bound to. That sounds a lot more fun to be a real bad guy, but it's like jail doesn't sound too great for me.
Well, I was going to say there's money in it until there isn't, right? And then that's it. You're down. Go on. Sorry.
Oh no, I was just going to say that. It's not exactly the same, but a lot of the tooling and mindsets I like to think are sort of portable between the good guys and bad guys. Like we sort of have to. Like, mm-hmm. bad guys aren't going to pop responder immediately, right? They'll try to be more covert because they mm-hmm. don't want to get caught. But the processes and the mindsets, I think, are still portable. But, yeah, we just don't try to terrorize people and get financial information and stuff like that, you know?
I was going to say, have you ever seen anything that you really thought, oh, I shouldn't. I found a document somewhere, or I found a database somewhere, or a picture somewhere, and you're like, yeah, hang on, I need to close this and pretend I've never seen it.
Well, it gets a little touchy for it depends on what type of client it is too, but
mm-hmm.
generally anything with money or HR that may have all that sensitive information, we steer away from. As much as I would like to look at it, maybe there's some valuable info and like, you know, HR profiles for people, but yeah, just for legal reasons, we steer clear from it, you know, but we sure to note it, be like, hey, you know,
here's a screenshot of file names and we'll leave it at that. And
that's all we do. We have to, and plus, like I said, we're on the clock. So it's like, we have to keep going.
I'm a bit tongue in cheek and joking slightly, because we all know that you have to have a definitive scope when you're looking at pen testing, whether it's the IP ranges, whether it's the activity, whether they're saying, look, we've got a database here, just go and see if you can find it or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And that's what sets us apart, right, between us and the bad guys, is that we have that limit. We have that line that we can't cross. So, So I joke, but I'm glad most of your answers to that were no.
Well, and I would say overall, the motivation and driver of why we're doing this is different, right? Like, so we want to help, you know, identify any shortcomings that the company may have for whatever reason. We don't care. And just help them, you mm-hmm. know? Like, we also have additional services where we're like, hey, we have people that can help you, but, like, that's not required. But, yeah, the draw is to help people try to identify risk as much as possible in whatever time frame we're given and whatever they're paying. And that's the part I like. Like, I joked with my coworkers. I said, I probably look forward to client calls more than the clients do. But it's like, let's go over the report, you know? I like that part.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you're doing something. I'm not planning a CTF. I'm actually helping people.
Yeah. And you're not just sitting there saying your baby's ugly. This is what we found. No. You're sitting there going, actually, this is what we found. This is how you can remediate this. This is how you can fix it. And that's what people want from the pen testing, right? So
That was something that so whenever you're training for this pen testing life, they don't really train you on writing reports and how to communicate with customers at their level. And that's a part of pen testing reporting that I was not prepared for. So there's like an executive summary that's meant for executive board level, just a high level view. And there's attack narratives for whoever wants to read that. And then there's findings that are like tear sheets you can give to, you know, PMs or engineering groups to just, here's the problem, fix it. And having to communicate at those levels was a challenge at first, but it was also kind of fun. But at the same token, it's like, we're also pen testers, so we're sure to highlight, this looks bad, but if you guys hadn't whitelisted us through two networks, we never would have got here. So it's not practical, but it's a risk, and it's easily fixable. Or that's why we like to mention all the good things that happen, because there really are a lot of good, hardworking people. They just are usually under-resourced, like, you know, most of us. So sometimes you'll get a customer that's a CTO or a CISO, whatever. And he's like, yeah, we know that's a problem. If you could just like highlight it, that would be amazing. Because I can't get the resources to fix it.
So. Yeah. And it's an ongoing challenge. I think one of the things that we see when there's a security breach is that the InfoSec community, there's two elements. One is incredibly supportive. And the other is an element where, not necessarily shitting on people, but they will say, oh, look, you've been breached. Look what's happened. But you have to remember there's a human element to this. There are response teams. There are IT teams. There are network teams that are working at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're working over weekends. They're working, public holidays, Memorial Day, whatever it may be, because something's happened and they're there at the back end and they're having to deal with it. There's always limited time and limited resources there. Very interesting what you were saying about the way in which you communicate within the report writing from a pen tester, because I think a lot of the focus is on the technical skills, because obviously without that you can't be a pen tester. But being able to communicate and articulate that back, and I've heard it from many people, and it's been mentioned on a couple of the previous episodes as well, is that's a really key skill, is to being able to do that report writing and be able to articulate what you've done or what you found and what is the risk associated with that, so they can go and remediate that. Again, don't sit there and call the baby ugly. You need to articulate. I don't know whether that's an English phrase, because you've smirked a couple of times.
No, great. No, okay. I get it. Yeah. It's so true.
That report writing part is really key. Thinking about the training and talking about training as well, I just wanted to kind of touch on a little bit of the stuff that you've done for Black Hat as well. So this is something where my work colleagues always laugh at me when I mention the word Black Hat, because I do some work in the NOC for them, and I don't shut up about it because I love it. It is one of the best parts of my job is to get and go and spend a week in the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore and go and work at Black Cat. So that's fantastic. I love that bit. So that sounds I thought fun. I'd get that in there because they like the fact I never shut up about it. But you're on the other side. You've done either some training or some setup and involved in that training. How did you get involved in that? And what's that like for you on the other side of the?
Well, the way I got started is I'm a glutton for responsibility. So someone left that did all the labs and was a trainer.
You put your hand up.
And I'm like, hey, I'll do it. I mean, it was also from a practical standpoint of like, I know how to provision things in AWS. I know how CloudFormation works. Like, I know all the stuff. I'm like, look, we got a month. Like, I got this. But, yeah, so I offered to help, and they were like, sure. You know, like, we'd love to have you help. I'm like, sweet. And so it's been virtual, I think. I think they started a few years ago before I joined the company.
Okay.
But now we're actually going to Black Hat this year. I found out yesterday.
You'll be at Vegas in August.
Yeah, I'll be in Vegas. Was it Mandalay Bay here?
Mm-hmm.
Teaching adversary emulation and active defense with my coworker Blaze. My trainer profile isn't on here yet because they messed up, but I'll be there. But yeah, we just like it was nice because last time it's not generally like. Hackers or like, I mean, they might be, but a lot of them were like decision makers or people that were, you know, like getting their points for, you know, whatever CPU certifications.
Points,
yeah. But they did get to get a high level overview of what it's like as an attacker from it just really everything. Like I could scroll through all the stuff, but it's like how C2s and like, event logging and all the Windows attacks with the tokens and impersonations and, you know, AD stuff and pivoting. So they get and Kerber hosting, which is fun, but they get a high level overview of it. So if they're a decision maker in that space, they don't need to be an expert per se, but they know the language. They know what you're talking about. And I like that. It's also hands on. So we provide labs so they can walk through it if they want. They don't have to. That's up to them. But it for me, it's like I like being able to help people. And so that's the draw for me. I'm excited about it. I'm not excited about being in Vegas for a week. It's really hot there. But in August of all times.
I was going to say, don't get me started. I think I'll be out there towards the end of August. I'm not sure I'll be there for Black Hat because we've got the US team that man mm-hmm. that. But I think we've got a company event in Vegas a couple of weeks after that. So yeah, end of August
it's
in
so
Vegas as a British man who is sitting here at the moment in hoodie because I'm cold and it's middle of June. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, the Black Hat stuff is great. I know, you know, again, my colleagues are a little bit tongue in cheek because I don't sharp about it, but I love the event. I love what it represents, what it does. It's changed over time. But I think the training is such a key part of what that event is. Those first few days, from a training perspective, are busy, obviously not as busy as the main event, but there's a huge amount of people there. There's a great take up on those training courses, and it's a really big part of what Black Hat is. So it's really good to hear your side of it from a trainer perspective, because it's normally me at the other end going, we've got all this shit going out through the firewall. We need to know, figure out whether it's a training course or whether somebody's actually doing something nasty.
Our labs are pretty good. I mean, I hopefully start working on them in 3 weeks again once I'm done with pen tests I'm working on. And hopefully nothing changed. I already had a problem with XRDP this past week, so hopefully that doesn't persist to the lab because we use Guacamole, which is pretty helpful. People don't have to configure VPNs if they don't want, but yeah, just teaching people is something I enjoy, and they seem to be receptive of it. You know, I'm a little concerned about my first time teaching at Black Hat because I don't know the expectations. Like, what's the room going to be like? Is there going to be AC? I hope.
It's Vegas. Of course,
something is always going to break, you know. So, like, even last time, it's like spin up a student lab, but sometimes a machine and it'll break or not work right. And you're like, oh, man, you can spin it back up.
Yeah, we've. I've done training roles before. Nothing like Black Hat by any stretch, but those kind of concerns when you go into a training room and go, right, is this going to work? What the delegate's going to be like? Are they going to throw something at me? Are they all that kind of kind of stuff?
I love it when people ask questions. That's what I want. You know,
the two-way communication, I think, is really key. As much as it's great as a trainer to be able to impart some of that knowledge, if you're not getting anything back, it's really difficult to understand, am I doing this right? Am I pitching it right? Are you understanding what it is? I'd much rather them throw a whole load of questions at me and actually show they're engaged and listening, which is great. I was going to say, only a little anecdote, because again, from the time in the knock, is that when I did, I wasn't in Singapore this year, but when I was in London last year, day one of training, an hour into the day, we saw somebody in the training room surfing adult content. And we were thinking, God, you're paying thousands of pounds, thousands of dollars for this training at Black Hat, and you're sitting there surfing porn. It was quite unbelievable, really. But hopefully you won't get anything along.
Yeah, hopefully not. That would be terrible. Get some kind of alert. Yeah, we had to shut off your network because there's a lot of porn going through it. What?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. People jump on somebody else's network and goes, yeah, what's the first thing I'm going to do? It's like when people are going Google Maps, the first thing they look for is their house. I'm like, you see that all the time. Why? Yeah. go and look for something else.
I haven't seen it from up top.
Anyway, look, we're kind of coming towards the end, and we'll come on to the for sock's sake, if I can say it properly.
Okay.
Before we get into that, the only other thing really, I guess kind of going back a little bit to your journey into pen testing, you've talked a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. Do you have any kind of suggestions, recommendations, if there's anybody there that wants to move into that field? Mm-hmm. You said yourself, you went into the OCP, that's the one, without really having a full understanding maybe of what it entailed. But do you have any kind of...
Or what it was like versus suggesting all the other certs in the world.
Absolutely. I only knew
OSCP. I'm like,
yeah.
But I would say good suggestions. I've helped a lot of people in this place, in that space. But I would say just be persistent. I would say vulnerable and admit what you don't know and ask for help. Because I found the community at large is generally very helpful. Like if you don't have like a massive ego, you're like, hey, I'm just trying to learn. Here's some stuff I tried. Can you perhaps point me in the right direction or give me some advice? You know what you're doing. I'm just following what Ipsic did on a YouTube videos, but yeah, just sticking with it and trying to have fun. Cause I would say at least try to go hard on CTFs. I mean, you go bug bounty way, but I did CTFs and just try to have fun with it. Like I've met some people who it wasn't the life for them. Like they were doing it and it didn't bring the joy that they thought it would. And they ended up going, you know, the blue side or some developer side. But, you know, I'd say that, and which I think was super helpful for me, was networking with actual people in like a real way. So, not just like, you know, liking what they do and retweeting. That's not a real interaction, but like, hey man, how's it going? Or like really talk to people, even if it's on a small level, because I think that helped me a lot. Like I met the people that ended up hiring me through Twitter. Like this was 2020 Twitter, you know, it was a little different landscape then, but
pre-Musk Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I would say that's what helped me. Just be persistent. There's also a local DEF CON group that was near me. And it felt good to have sort of a community instead of just feeling like you're doing it on your own and you ask stupid questions at random. For me, I compare it to the Island of Misfit Toys, where I'm like, I'm home, you know, where it's like all these like renegades and punks and like people that don't quite fit in well.
My people.
Yeah. Like, I know everyone isn't like that, but for me, that was a draw. And it really is like, we accept you as you are. Like, we're here to support you. Like, I've never gotten that in a sysadmin developer DBA community. Like, I don't even know if they have communities like that. So I think just don't be afraid to participate with people, commune with people, because at least in the offensive security space, it's a very small world. You know, like everybody knows everybody, and you kind of don't want to burn your bridge. But also at the same time, it's an opportunity where you can share your journey, share your struggles, and people see that, like, man, this person is really trying. They really care. You know, I want to help them out, you know, pay it forward. I would say that's probably the most helpful advice. There's not going to be any shortcuts. At the end of the day, like, I've heard of people that cheat on their OSCP exams, and I'm like, why? Eventually you're going to get an assignment and you're going to be stuck with it. You have the scope and you just have to go.
It really, really interesting what you're saying there about networking, because mm-hmm. I think it's a really underestimated part of being in the InfoSec community, whether you're red teaming, blue teaming, whether you're in the SOC, whether you're DFIR, whatever it is, you will have like-minded people around you. There is always somebody more experienced than you. There's always somebody that knows something that you don't. And that networking is really, really fundamental to that. I think a lot of people focus on, oh, I need to get this exam. I need to do this. I need to do this. Sure, you need the technical ability, of course. Mm-hmm. But unless you're in that environment, we've got a local DC group here, actually, that I go to semi-regularly when I get a bit of time. But having that group of people that you can lean on and communicate with, whether it's in person, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Discord, I think it's a really underestimated area, really, to focus on. Look, Chris, thank you very much. Oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, probably if I didn't have that community, I don't know if I would have persisted with it. Because it can feel pretty lonely when you're just solving CTFs and you sort of feel dumb because you don't know what you're doing. You're trying a new skill. So having that support group is super helpful. You don't feel like you might still feel like a dummy, but you won't be alone.
I think there's an element of comparison to your peers in the fact that not necessarily from a direct technical perspective, but it's kind of like, am I going in the right direction? Am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? And there's only so much you can do on your own. So to be able to have that networking group, bounce things off each other, bounce ideas off each other, and kind of help each other in that regard. I think that's really key.
Yeah, I agree. Really, it's probably one of my favorite parts of this.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I set up the podcast, right? So I can sit here and network and chat shit to people like you, which is great. Look, Chris, thank you very much for being on the pod. Really, really appreciate it. I know it's taken a lot of time for us to actually get together and schedule some time.
Oh, yeah.
Especially
it's
with
life issues.
The time difference as well, because, you know, it's late in the evening from here in the UK. So thank you very much for your time. Of course, the last thing that we finish off with as part of the podcast is the For Sock's Sake section, where we look at something that has either gone wrong or screwed up or whatever that's made you kind of shout, oh, for sock's sake. Do you have anything in particular? I kind of hope you have, because I've set you up now towards the end.
No.
Do you have anything that's kind of made you shout or is it something more generalized?
Oh, no, I have plenty. I'm trying to
pick which one you want
get it through a filter. But
there is no filter. Say what you like.
I purposefully didn't listen to one of your podcasts other than the second one with the IKEA folks, but so I wouldn't be tainted on how to answer things. But I would say customers that that are pretty rough. I think that's the worst part. Like any technical issue, any misunderstanding, I can deal with that no problem. Like, that's just people. But I think people that customers or clients that maybe make life harder and sort of make you feel like you're wasting your time mm-hmm. is the worst. I can't go into specifics because it would out them, but
oh,
but I think from just a general standpoint of like, hey, I'm here to help you. I value providing value. And if it just seems like everything I'm doing is pointless, then it's annoying.
Yeah.
Especially for customers with pen testing that just want the checkbox. They'll take everything they can out of scope. Like they just want that pen testing checkbox. And it's like, oh, man, all right. I mean, we'll do it, but you're going to get a real pen test regardless. Oh,
for sock's sake, do it properly. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that. Other than that, there's not really too much. I don't really get phased too much in that regard. I could sort of be like a robot. That is, it's not helped me too much on interviews. Like, they're like, hey, what's the most amazing hack you ever did? I'm like, I don't know. I forget all about them once they're over. Like, I wish I had all these cool stories, you know?
Maybe the best way, right? Just get it out of your mind, focus on the next job.
I'm very, very robotic in that way. Like, I'm super, like, I'm an extrovert. I'm very out there. But like when it comes to work, it's like Einstein, you know, it's like only report things of note and of record.
Then off you go. Look, Chris, really appreciate your time. As I said, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. I feel like I could talk to you for hours and it's already over.